WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of Bolts of the Nation, the podcast that brings you the latest political news and elections analysis. In this episode, we are going to be discussing the situation in Tennessee, especially involving the Tennessee Three. But before we get there, how did we get here anyways? Well, we have to go back to March 27th, 2023. And before I speak any further, I'm going to offer out a content warning. I will be discussing some traumatic events involving the Covenant School and the mass shooting that went on there. So if you are uncomfortable with that or feel uneasy or queasy or anything related to that, then this is essentially your trigger warning because I am going to discuss that situation first. So on March 27th, there was a mass shooting at the Covenant School, a Presbyterian private school in Nashville, Tennessee, which led to the deaths of 3 adults and 3 students at the school. Before, everything that happened involving the state capital of Tennessee 3, there was a movement by many conservatives to paint this as an attack on Christians by trans people because the shooter was supposedly trans, and and just a bunch of other stuff that ultimately did not become the main focus of the story. Like, apparently, a lot of conservative commentators were saying that there was a manifesto which apparently showed the shooter's hatred of Christians, which ultimately turned out either not to exist, or the manifesto that was being described by the police was essentially just a bunch of scribbled drawings and stuff that had essentially nothing to do with the allegations levied by those commentators. So now that we've discussed the shooting, we can discuss 3 days later on March 30th. This inspired a wave of protests across Tennessee, especially in Nashville, in favor of gun control and against gun violence. And they went to the Tennessee State Capitol. They marched on the Tennessee State Capitol for forum on gun laws. And they were joined by 3 Democratic state representatives. They were joined by Representative Justin Jones of Nashville, Representative Justin Pearson of Memphis, and Representative Gloria Johnson of Knoxville. Those 3 ended up chanting no action, no peace during the proceeding that day. Especially Representative Jones and Pearson, were using a bullhorn, which ultimately was determined by the Tennessee House Republican leadership to be a violation of rules of decorum in the Tennessee State House. Those 3 would ultimately be ended up accused of breaking the decorum rules of the State House. And Representative Cameron Sexton, the Speaker of the House, we'll talk more about him later as well. He condemned this protest. He compared it to the riots on January 6th, in which a mob of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol in an attempt to reinstate Donald Trump as the President of the United States. Cameron Sexton compared it to that. Mr. Sexton revoked their ID card access to the state capitol and stripped them of their committee assignments a few days later. Now, Tennessee has a history, it's a short history, but a history of expulsions. The first one, I believe, post-Civil War, was in 1980 when a GOP state representative by the name of Robert Fisher was expelled by a near-unanimous vote for bribery. In 2016, another GOP state representative by the name of Jeremy Durham was expelled in 2016 for sexual misconduct and assault. That vote was also nearly unanimous as well. So So again, there you see that history, a very short history of the expulsion votes. And once it became clear that the Speaker of the House and the Tennessee House Republican leadership were moving for the expulsion votes for these three state legislatures, the reaction was quite swift. And from everybody, there was a essentially it ended up going viral on Twitter. It ended up going, you know, viral on TikTok. People were tuning into the situation, wondering what was going on. Well, you see, there was these three House representatives that were essentially being put up for expulsion. And what is interesting about this is that during the protests, during like on March 30th, when these things were going down, another GOP state representative by the name of Justin Lafferty had shoved Representative Justin Jones during the protest, and I believe took a possession from Jones. I believe it may have been Jones's phone. And essentially, this had to be given back to Jones by another state legislator. And this is part of the reaction from those on the left, from Democratic activists and officials, who decided to say, hey, these Republican state senators and lieutenant governors, even state representatives, did all these things, yet they're not being expelled. But these three Democratic state representatives are facing expulsion votes for violating the quorum rules. And those on the left were essentially accusing the Tennessee GOP of hypocrisy, considering the fact that State Senator Joey Hensley was accused. Those accusations were brought back up that he had prescribed opioids to his lover being his second cousin. And also people were quick to post that Lieutenant Governor Randy McNally, the GOP Lieutenant Governor, was essentially, and this was a few months before the Covenant shooting, he was essentially caught, well, how do I say this? He was essentially caught thirsting over, I'm trying to find the words for this that would be okay to use on WVUA. Essentially, he got caught, you know, liking a thirst trap of someone who is openly gay, even though Randy McNally has urged for anti-trans and legislation and has urged for legislation that could be seen as an attack on pride celebrations themselves. He was caught liking and commenting on a post of a gay man who was not exactly the most clothed, you could say. And thus, people were quick to remind Twitter and the lieutenant governor of that reality as well. So, the expulsion votes themselves. Now we move into April 6th, and it became very clear that these three were going to face expulsion votes, and that it was likely that at least one, if not all three, of the now-dubbed Tennessee Three would potentially be expelled. So the first up to face an expulsion vote was Justin Jones. And these expulsion hearings would go on for hours. They lasted throughout essentially the entire day of April 6th. And at the end of it, Justin Jones was expelled from the Tennessee State House by a 72-25 vote, which was almost entirely split on party lines. There was one GOP state representative by the name of Charlie Baum from Murfreesboro that voted against expulsion. There was another GOP representative that did not vote on whether to expel Justin Jones. So he was, I think there was actually two vacancies, or at least one who didn't vote. And I can't remember if there was another GOP that didn't vote or if that's just a vacant seat. Just looking at it now, and it appears that, you know, there are two vacancies on the Tennessee State House. Those would be, of course, you know, the seats held by those would be the seats held by the expelled representative. So next up after Justin Jones was Gloria Pierce, Gloria Johnson. Gloria Johnson is a white Democratic lawmaker from Knoxville. Representative Justin Jones and Justin Pearson are both black. And what was interesting about Gloria Johnson's case is that she was saved from expulsion by one vote. Apparently, she was the defense was she was essentially just standing there in support of Representatives Jones and Pearson, not really doing anything. And thus, in a 65-30 vote, she was not expelled. Now, the Tennessee State House requires a supermajority to expel a representative, which is 66 votes in this case. Although there was a majority, of course, the Tennessee House GOP fell short of the votes they needed to expel her. And she was ultimately not expelled from the Tennessee State House. And Representative Justin Pearson of Memphis ultimately was expelled in a 69-26 vote. Two GOP state representatives, Shirley Baum of Murfreesboro, as I mentioned earlier, but also John Gillespie of Memphis, were voting against the expulsion of Justin Pearson. So two out of the three Tennessee three were expelled, both of whom were black. And this ignited a furor. Essentially, they were calling the Tennessee House GOP racist for expelling the two black lawmakers, but not the white one. Even from Representative Gloria Johnson herself, who, when she was asked why she wasn't expelled but Pearson and Jones were, she pointed to the fact that she was white and the two were black, essentially calling the Tennessee House GOP leadership racist. And immediately, almost, there were condemnations from elected officials the world over, including from President Joe Biden, former President Barack Obama, former Vice President Al Gore, and Democratic lawmakers the world over. There are even a couple of former GOP House representatives who had retired before, of course, the expulsion votes way before that, but they were calling out the Tennessee House GOP leadership there as well. And what had happened after these expulsions was the next day, Vice President Kamala Harris came to Nashville to speak with the Tennessee Three. I believe it was at Fisk University in Nashville, a historically black college and university in the state. So she spoke with them there. Essentially, those three became national figures as a result of the expulsion votes. And soon it became pretty clear that there was going to be a movement to reappoint Representatives Justin Jones and Justin Pearson to the State House. Now, Tennessee requires that an interim appointment be made for any House seat that is vacant as a result of course, expulsion. And it's by majority vote of the County Board of Commissioners in Nashville. That is the Nashville-Davidson County Metro Council. In Memphis, that's the Shelby County Board of Commissioners. And before the votes to reappoint Jones, which was on Monday, and Pearson, which was on Wednesday, there was a lot of drama beforehand. So essentially, there was accusations from local media and from Democratic officials in the state of Tennessee that there was threats by the Tennessee GOP leadership to pull funding from projects in Shelby County, including the refurbishment of FedEx Forum with a Memphis Grizzlies play, if Justin Pearson was reappointed. In response to this, And the reporting that the Memphis's mayor, who I believe is called Jim Strickland, was lobbying against the reappointment of Representative Pearson for this exact reason. And also in response to the reporting that the current negotiations was that the vote was narrowly in favor of Pearson at the time, 7-6, with all four GOP commissioners and two Democratic commissioners leaning against reappointing Pearson. Then there was a counterweight threat made on Twitter by Alan Creasy, who is a executive committee man within the Tennessee Democratic Party, who said he was going to move to expel any Democrat who was on the Shelby County Board of Commissioners who did not vote to reappoint Pearson. And he said that it was a 7-6, that the current, that mood in the Shelby County Board of Commissioners at the time was 7-6 in favor of Pearson. And Justin Jones of Nashville, he accused Speaker Sexton of threatening to not seat himself or Pearson if they were reappointed until 2025, essentially keeping those seats vacant until the next Congress of the Tennessee State Legislature. And this was in an interview, believe with, if I remember correctly, it was an interview with Simone Sanders on NBC with herself and the Tennessee Three, where Justin Jones made these allegations. And Justin Pearson on Sunday, now we're moving towards Sunday, now Pearson has accused some unnamed Tennessee state legislatures, of on commenting and, again, content warning on what Pearson is about to say. He accused some Tennessee state GOP lawmakers of making remarks that he and other black legislators and people should be, quote, hanging from a tree. Now, of course, us being in the South, we will understand the sordid history of lynching and extrajudicial killings of innocent black people in the United States and in the South, especially as it pertains to such cases as Emmett Till. And on that same day, there were reports in West Tennessee in the aftermath of the expulsion votes. There were accusations that the state of Tennessee was trying to buy off black farmers' land for a new electric truck plant in Haywood County, Tennessee. Black farmers were essentially accusing the state of trying to buy that land for far less than what it was worth. So this was used again as another way to accuse Tennessee GOP leadership of engaging in racism against black people. So that also happened. And also, going back to Representative Cameron Sexton, there were reports that he might not actually be qualified to represent his House district, which contains the town of Cookeville. He's purportedly from Cookeville, but there has been reporting in the past few days, you know, starting on Monday and even going up until today, that Cameron Sexton has actually bought a house in and lives in the city of Nashville. This would, of course, violate election residency requirements, as, you know, each state legislator has to be a qualified voter of the district, which they're trying to represent. If this reporting is confirmed, then this would put Speaker Sexton in violation of those laws, considering that all reporting seems to indicate that his primary residence is in Nashville instead of Cookeville. There have also been accusations of Speaker Sexton essentially stealing from the taxpayers on, you know, on these grounds. Because he purportedly lives in Cookeville, which is over 50 miles outside of Nashville, he and other state legislators that live over 50 miles outside of Nashville would be entitled to a higher per diem cost for travel than legislators that live 50 miles or closer to Nashville or who live within Nashville itself. Speaker Sexton, as he is purportedly from Cookeville, took the larger per diems for travel costs and other things, but if he actually lives in Nashville instead of Cookeville, then that means that he will have also been accused of stealing from the Tennessee Treasury. We'll wait to see where that goes. Personally, I don't think this is going to go anywhere, since this would require the Speaker of the House to likely resign for this, which is probably not going to happen. But this is essentially once again being used by Democrats and those left of center as basically attacking GOP leaders for hypocrisy, essentially. The argument is you're going to expel these representatives for protesting and violating decorum rules, but you're not going to oust a Speaker of the House that doesn't even live in the district he purports to represent. So going on to Monday, and Representative Justin Jones faced a reappointment vote from the Metro Council. And the Metro Council is a 40-member, essentially, city-county council. Nashville is a city-county government with Davidson County. Think of it like Athens-Clarke County in Georgia. Think of it like, essentially, like Charlottesville City or Richmond City in Virginia. And examples like that, Broomfield, Colorado, Denver, Colorado, are also two good examples of city-county governments. So Nashville has that, and the Metro Council unanimously voted a 36-0 vote. There were four abstentions to reappoint Justin Jones to his House district. And Justin Jones took the oath, and he is now back in the state House. Now, it was less certain for Representative Justin Pearson. Of course, there was the reporting about lobbying against reappointing Justin Pearson, but that ultimately ended up not coming to fruition, as in the Shelby County Board of Commissioners on Wednesday, today's recording, Justin Pearson was reappointed to the Tennessee State House by a unanimous vote as well. However, that vote was 7-0 with six abstentions. Of course, that barely meets the requirement for a quorum. Of course, a quorum in the Shelby County Board of Commissioners being a majority of members present. Majority of Shelby County Board of Commissioners being present. A quorum was 7, the quorum was reached, and Pearson was reappointed. So, what does this all mean? But before I get to what this all means, there's actually some reporting from the Tennessee Hall, which is an activist magazine that I mentioned earlier on the broadcast, about infighting in the Tennessee GOP caucus. And essentially, they said they had leaked audio, about 10 minutes of audio, who were arguing over whether to expel or to move to expel the Tennessee Three. There was a state representative who had accused Republicans of, quote, bringing racism into it by expelling Jones and Pearson, but not Johnson. There were comments made by other state representatives who were saying, quote, we're at war for our republic. Like, a state representative last name is Sipicki said, quote, you gotta do what's right even when you think it might be wrong. And lots more arguments over what should have been done with the Tennessee Three. And Tennessee leadership, like Representative Zachary, are right to worry about, you know, potential backlash, even if they're not likely to ever lose their majority in the next two decades, let alone the next decade, given not just the great political geography that Tennessee Republicans have, but also because of the gerrymandering of the state, House, state, Senate, and congressional maps that Tennessee Republicans did with their supermajorities. Because this has essentially revitalized the Tennessee Democratic Party that have moves to essentially donate to the Tennessee Three, especially Justin Jones and Justin Pearson, when they were technically expelled from the state House and no longer state representatives. You can't fundraise when the House is in session, I believe, in Tennessee, but because Jones and Pearson were not members of the House during that time they were expelled and before they were reappointed, they could fundraise. And so at least hundreds of thousands of dollars were donated to both of their campaigns, respectively. The Tennessee Democratic Party also got a lot of donations, and there seems to be a lot more, you know, energizing of the Tennessee Democratic Party base, which is largely centered around the urban centers of Memphis, Nashville, Chattanooga, and Knoxville. So let me go ahead and cap this off by explaining the political geography of Tennessee from west to east. So we're going to start off in Memphis in the southwest of Tennessee. It has historically been heavily racially polarized. Memphis is a majority black city, and it is a heavily Democratic city. You know, some of the blackest parts of Memphis give Democrats over 95% of the vote. Then you move over to sort of more, you know, East Memphis, which is a lot more swingy. You know, East Memphis is heavily white. I mean, it is 50-50 now between Biden and Trump, but historically very Republican, just like the outlying suburbs of Bartlett, of Germantown, of Collierville, and of Lakeland. Those four areas are still very reliably Republican. They give Republicans well over 20 or even well over 30% margins of victory in many cases. But those areas, those suburbs, those heavily white suburbs, have started to shift left over the course of the Trump era. Those voters that may be economically conservative but are absolutely turned off by Donald Trump's brand, by his attitude, and potentially by the modern social conservatism of the National Republican Party itself. And so you see these sort of not exactly countervailing trends, even though the GOP has made gains with some black voters during the Trump era, but Shelby County slowly moving left. Then you get to more of West Tennessee, outside of Memphis, which it's the area between Memphis and Clarksville, I would say. I mean, Clarksville itself is in a Trump by 11 county. Clarksville, I believe, is a very large black population. You would consider it, would it be part of West Tennessee? Would it be part of Middle Tennessee? I don't know. It's in that weird region, like it's just south of Kentucky. But West Tennessee is reliably Republican. A pretty decent chunk of the population is black, especially when you get closer to areas like Jackson, Tennessee. But, you know, very heavily racially polarized, heavy movements to the GOP there, heavy GOP movements, or pro-GOP movements over the past 20 years in Middle Tennessee, which was historically a heavily Democratic area, especially in areas immediately west and east of Nashville, who regularly elected Democrats at the statewide and at the federal level, voted for Democrats at all levels of government. But over the past 20 years, during the Bush, Obama, and Trump years, have shifted hard to the right. Now, these are areas, these are some of the most conservative areas in the state of Tennessee, especially rural areas a couple miles outside of Nashville, like the city of Cookeville, for example. Now, these are pretty heavily populated areas. They give Republicans 40 to 50, maybe 60-point margins in some cases. And then within Middle Tennessee, however, is the Nashville metro area. You have Davidson County, where Nashville is. Then you have Sumner County to the northeast. You have Wilson County to the east. You have Rutherford County to the southeast, and Williamson County to the south, and Dixon County to the west. Now, those counties that I mentioned contain a lot of suburbs and exurbs of Nashville, especially Williamson, Rutherford, and to a lesser extent, Wilson and Sumner. Dixon is more exurban, west of Nashville. It is growing too, but it hasn't seen the same trends as the other counties. Now, the counties that surround Nashville are historically conservative, reliably conservative, especially Williamson County to the south, which has been regarded as the heart of the GOP for decades. Like, even during the era of Al Gore, that regularly gave great margins to Republicans, and especially George W. Bush in his victory in the state of Tennessee in 2000. But those areas have now started to trend hard to the left during the Trump era, not just Nashville, but Williamson County, Rutherford County especially. I believe it's only Trump by 14, I believe, with a 10-point shift left from 2016 to 2020. Wilson and Sumner counties have seen the same thing because they touch Nashville. Like, they are suburbs and exurbs of Nashville itself now, and they've started to see 6 to 7-point shifts left from 2016 to 2020 as well. And who knows what that's going to be like in 2024, given, if Donald Trump and Joe Biden are the presumptive nominees, or if they're not going to be the nominees, then what does that look like? Are their shifts going to hold up? Are they going to slow down? Are they going to stop? who knows? Then you get outside of Nashville, you get to the middle of Tennessee part I talked about. But then you get, you know, to southeast Tennessee, you get more towards Chattanooga. Hamilton County has been swinging left, you know, for a good bit. Now, you know, you not only have Chattanooga, which is a decent black population, but also the suburb of Red Bank. Red Bank, it was historically Republican, but it voted for Joe Biden by around 3 or so points in 2020. Then you move up, you know, north, you know, sort of that area between Chattanooga and Knox County, still very conservative, gives Republicans very good margins. Then you move into Knox County. Historically, you know, conservative. We had moved more into East Tennessee. The exurbs and outlying suburbs are still very red, especially the outer parts of Knox County. But as you get more into Farragut and the western suburbs, those are still pretty Republican, but not as much as other parts of Knox County. Those areas have been shifting hard to the left. The city of Knoxville itself is the same deal. Fun fact about Knox County, this is the county where Glenn Jacobs, otherwise known as Kane in WWE, where he worked for decades, not just in the 1990s, but, you know, throughout the 2000s and 2010s, and even in the early 2020s, I believe he ended up becoming a 24/7 champion as Mayor Glenn Jacobs when Raw was in Knoxville, Tennessee. He ended up still winning that, you know, now defunct championship. Although that whole WWE thing is probably not in the purview of Pulse of the Nation. But I thought it was an interesting factoid that a famous wrestler is now a mayor, an elected official. A Republican elected official, because Tennessee has mayors of counties. Like, you know, like you have your mayors of Grundy County, your mayor of, you know, your mayor of like Hable County and Hardeman County and, you know, areas like that. They have a mayor of Knox County too. But then you move outside of Knoxville, you move more east. Knoxville is where the University of Tennessee's flagship university is, by the way. Just in case, you know, it hasn't been ran through your head over the past over the past couple of semesters, especially if you're a freshman. Then you move into East Tennessee, and East Tennessee is a very interesting political history because East Tennessee, you have to go all the way back to the Civil War to tell this, because East Tennessee was a Union stronghold. It was anti-Confederacy. It did not vote to secede from the Union. And a lot of the areas in East Tennessee ended up fighting for the Union, essentially. And thus, after the Civil War, it became a Republican stronghold because, you know, President Abraham Lincoln was a Republican and the Democratic Party at the time was seen as the party of slaveholders, especially in the Southeast, Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi. You would see this throughout the next 120 years, you know, up until the 1980s and the Reagan Revolution even. But East Tennessee always remained a strong Republican stronghold. And just saying strong Republican stronghold is probably repetitive, but it still holds true even in 2020. East Tennessee is one of the most reliably Republican portions of the entire country, giving Republicans 80 to 20 margins in some cases. Although there are interesting movements like around Johnson City, you know, that is where East Tennessee State University is located. That is a lot younger, and thus Johnson City is more liberal than, you know, its counterparts in Washington County and the rest of East Tennessee. But East Tennessee is also seeing some slight shifts left, like especially around Johnson City and some parts around Bristol, maybe around Kingsport, but those areas largely still give Republicans extremely credible and extremely heavy margins. So because of the favorable political geography that I just described for Tennessee Republicans, it is essentially impossible right now to get Democrats to a position where they could be in a majority if they win the state. The political geography is just that bad. But of course, compounding this whole thing is gerrymandering. Of course, you know, Tennessee Republicans have gerrymandered themselves into supermajorities in the state house and likely the state senate for the remainder of the decade. Looking at the districts, you know, Democrats have a few flip opportunities. There's only one or two flip opportunities, one in the state house around Memphis, where there's a Biden district Republican representative, and one around Knox County. In the state senate, a GOP state senator is up there. That's the fast left turning that could vote for Biden in 24. But the other targets for Tennessee Democrats are all long-term 2028, 2030 targets. So it will be interesting to see over the years what the political backlash is for Tennessee Republicans, whether this energizes Democrats not just in Tennessee but across the Southeast, and if there are any, you know, reverberations across the country that could play crucial roles in the 2024 presidential election, which I will discuss in tomorrow's episode, episode 4. I'll be looking at all the presidential candidates, judging their chances of victory, and what the 2024 electoral map could possibly look like. Thank y'all for tuning in to episode 3 of Pulse of the Nation. I'm Braden Vick, and have a safe Saturday night.
Any opinions expressed in this program are those of the host and do not represent the thoughts or opinions of 90.7 WVUA or the University of Alabama.
WVUA-FM, Tuscaloosa.